Job chapter 15, and I do believe we're going to be able to finish this chapter. And then next week we will get into Job's answer. And then, like I said before, probably about a 2-week break. And then we'll pop right back in and pick up in chapter 16 and 17. And Job gets 2 chapters of answer here. And then Bildad will start in chapter 18 there. And we'll continue to move along. So if you'll stand out of love and respect for the Word of God, if you're physically able, just a few verses tonight as I read here, beginning in verse 25 through the end of the chapter. For he stretcheth out his hand against God and strengtheneth himself against the Almighty. And of course, he's talking about the wicked man. And he's comparing Job to this wicked individual. He runneth upon him, verse 26, even on his neck, upon the thick bosses of his bucklers, because he covereth his face with his fatness, and maketh collops of fat on his flanks. Then, and he dwelleth in desolate cities, and in houses which no man inhabiteth, which are ready to become heaps. He shall not be rich, neither shall his substance continue, neither shall he prolong the perfection thereof upon the earth. He shall not depart out of darkness. The flame shall dry up his branches, and by the breath of his mouth shall he go away. Let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his recompense. It shall be accomplished before his time, and his branch shall not be green. He shall shake off his unripe grape as the vine, and shall cast off his flower as the olive. For the congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate, and fire shall consume the tabernacles of bribery. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepareth deceit. Now, just to review, Job has been attacked for the second time now by Eliphaz, but even more vicious than before. And so he's really pushing Job to confess to be a hypocrite, to confess to being a wicked man, an insincere man, basically a false person, because Job has appeared to be righteous, appeared to be godly, but there's no way that he could be godly and righteous and have to go through this difficulty. Okay? That just doesn't compute in Eliphaz's mind. Okay? And so he's saying he's really pressing Job, and really he's trying to, the good word for this is provoke him, okay? He's trying to push him so hard that he says, fine, I'm wicked. You know, that's what he's going for. He's trying to push that type of an answer out of Job. And so he's really laying it on thick here, and we know he's talked about the wicked, and that Job is a wicked sinner getting what he has deserved. He is telling him that he has reasons for this thinking because of his wisdom and the wisdom that's been passed on to him from others, his own experiences, and his own feelings about the matter. And then he goes on in verses 20, now through, and it will be all the way through 35, to lay out the case of the wicked. And by the way, in verses 20 through 35, these are all true biblical things about the wicked. But they just don't pertain to Job. But Eliphaz says they do. And so he's going to continue his description of the wicked man. And I want you to see here that I believe we see some more of this jealousy come out of Eliphaz. Okay, that's what I think it is. It's pride and jealousy. All right? And the devil is using this tool. Remember, we talked about this before. That the vision that Eliphaz saw was not a vision from an angel of God. It was a vision from the devil to further divide the friends. Because God said he could hurt Job's wealth, and he did, right? And all that he hath, including his children. He said he could hurt his health, and he did that. And he didn't say that he couldn't hurt his relationships. Obviously, the great pain and emotional suffering kind of hurt the relationship between Job and his wife. We saw that. And by the way, we're not accusing her because she went through a lot of things. Okay? So she wasn't saying it out of hatred. I think she was saying it out of pity for her husband, seeing him go through those things. That's my opinion. Now, but he's got these three friends that were supposed to come for comfort. Supposed to come for emotional support. But I believe the devil has turned them against this man by sending this false vision and by putting this seed in their minds that Job has to be wicked, has to be evil, in order for this great judgment to come upon him. And so this is getting worse and worse as it goes on. So let's pick it up in verse 25. It says, now this is about the wicked man, okay? Back in verse 20, he says, "The wicked man travaileth with pain all his days, and the number of his years is hidden to the oppressor." Okay? "A dreadful sound is in his ears." So in prosperity, the destroyer shall come upon him. All right? So all of these things, it has, all these pronouns are to the antecedent of the wicked man. Okay? So this is who we're talking about. So the wicked man, he stretches out his hand against God. We understand that the wicked rebel against God. That's it, right? We understand that. And by the way, when we are backslidden or away from God and we're rebelling against God, we're being wicked. Okay? And we can be, perhaps, even though we're saved, we can be defined as wicked because we're choosing to follow that path. So, I want you to understand that the wicked man, is one that stretches his hand out against God, and it says, and strengthen himself against the Almighty. So he's comparing it to a fight, if you will, or a battle that this wicked man purposes or exercises or strengthens himself against God. Okay, so he's preparing for combat with the Almighty. He says that he stretches out his hand against him and he prepares himself, he strengthens himself against the Almighty. Okay, so there's a conflict there, there's an opposition, and it's the wicked is, if you will, going after God. Do you understand that? Okay? God's not necessarily going after the wicked, although God does judge the wicked. But please understand, God wants the wicked to come to repentance. And God, in his divine providence, in his divine knowledge, in his omniscience and omnipotence and all those things that God is, he knows when to put the things in the wicked's path so that they will turn to God or choose to turn to God. Why? Because he's a benevolent God. Because he loves people. For God so loved the world. So if someone's, by the way, folks, listen to me. The reason why, as a child of God, God chastens us and knows exactly when and where and why and how to chasten us is not so that he can get the best punishment against us possible, but so that he can get the best result possible by us turning back to him because of the punishment. That's what he wants. You know, I learned that with young kids, little kids, and the littler they are, the younger they are, the more important this is, immediacy is so important with punishment. It's got to be quick, right? It's got to be immediate. By the way, if you let a 1, 2, 3, 4-year-old go a long time between the incident and the punishment, they really forget what it was all about. And they don't remember why they're getting, I mean, and it's just a disconnect. And so, but sometimes, so you got to punish them quickly, then the more quickly the better, right? Or the quicker the better, I guess I could say it that way. Now, sometimes with teenagers or older people, sometimes time is a punishment in itself. The duration between the actual event and the punishment is torture. And it's meant to be, okay? Sometimes you just make them sweat it out, right? Make them make them fret about it a little bit, because it gets them to think about it and like, oh, I really shouldn't have done that and I'll never do that again. And so, please understand, God knows how to get the best results out of the punishment. Whether it's for the saved who need to be coming back to fellowship, or whether it's for the lost to come to salvation. God knows what it's going to take. And so we see here, it's not God reaching out his arm against the wicked. It's the wicked strengthening himself and going against God. That's what a rebel does. And you see, what Eliphaz is saying is that Job is a rebel. That Job is strengthening himself against God. That Job has reached out and tried to attack God. So he says this is what the wicked does. He says he stretches out his hand against God and strengthens himself against the Almighty. It says in verse 26, it says, he runneth upon him, even on his neck, upon the thick bosses of his bucklers. Now, some of these definitions are interesting. All right. Now, most of us see the word bosses and think of our employer. Okay. So he's not running up on his employer. Okay. No, it's a boss is like a knob or a protrusion. All right. And in this case, it's the knob or protrusion on a buckler. A buckler is a small round shield normally worn by archers. And sometimes it was mounted here on their shoulders to protect them, you know, because they're drawing the bow. And this is right here by their neck. So as a protection. So he says here, he runneth up upon him, even upon his neck. So it's right here, right? And upon the knobs of his buck. So he's right on the knobs. They would usually put knobs or spikes or things on those shields for protection. Brother Adam is shaking his head. He's an amateur blacksmith guy kind of thing. He understands armament and those types of things. So what Eliphaz is explaining is this, the wicked, if you will, is on the offensive. Right? Not on the defensive. He's not sitting back. He's actively going against God. So I want you to think about this. In our story, we see the account where Job is minding his own business, right? Job is offering sacrifices for his kids. And this all comes out of nowhere. He wasn't picking a fight with God. He wasn't running up on his neck and attacking the very, very protrusions of his shield. And he wasn't doing, but Eliphaz says he is, because he's a wicked man. In verse 27, it says, because he covereth his face with his fatness and maketh collops of fat on his flanks. That just means he's really fat. Collops are globs or lumps of fat. Yeah, it's kind of like, he's just saying he's really fat. Collops of fat. Gobs and lumps of fat. And it says this fatness is worldliness. And just the fatness of this earth. And he's, I don't know what shape of man Job was, if he was a larger man, smaller man, fat man, skinny man. I don't know what kind of man he was. But basically what Eliphaz is telling him is, you've been living off the good things of life. You've been getting fat off of these things. And you're covering your face with fatness, and you're making collops of fat on your flanks. You're just getting fatter and fatter and fatter off of the riches of this world. By the way, Job was a wealthy man. He was well to do, and Eliphaz is accusing him of abusing that to his obesity or his being fat and all of the just living too well, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So he's accusing him of this. And then in verse 29 it says, he shall not be rich. By the way, what has just happened to Job? He was rich. Now he's not. He says here, neither shall his substance continue. All right, so it looks like everything has been taken away, and it doesn't look like it's going to be replenished. Right? Because Job has been cut off, it seems like. Okay? And so he says that. He says, neither shall he prolong the perfection thereof upon the earth. And so Job has, if you will, given off this idea that he is a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. By the way, was he? Yes, he is. Yes, he was, etc. But he says that his perfection shall not continue. So his completeness will not continue. His appearance of being wealthy and prominent and a person of position is not going to continue to flourish. It says in verse 30, he shall not depart out of darkness. So he's going to continue to be in darkness. He's going to be in darkness. And the flame shall dry up his branches. By the way, if you talk about branches, that's usually speaking of what? Your family, right? Your ability to have a family tree produce fruit, to be productive. You know, the branches have to be productive, right? They spread out there and they spread out the leaves and then they produce the fruit and then all those things happen. Like the way that trees are supposed to work. And so he says, this is not going to happen. It says, by the breath of his mouth shall he go away. So this is the fate of the wicked. And I'm going to read a few verses for you here in just a minute that go along with this out of other parts of the Bible. But it says, let not, in verse 31, let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his recompense. Okay, so In these vain things of riches and the gains and the fatness and the strength and all, it's all empty. It's emptiness. It's nothingness. And that's going to be their reward. You know, if you read through Ecclesiastes and hear what Solomon has to say about the things of this world, it's all vanity. And so we've got to realize that the world thinks the things of this earth are everything. That's what we go after, seek after, fight after, try to get, but it's not. It's a bunch of smoke and mirrors, if you will. And so you see here in verse 32, it talks more about the branch. And it shall be accomplished before his time, and his branch shall not be green. He shall shake off his unripe grape as the vine, and shall cast off his flower as the olive. So this is speaking of the future of his family. By the way, by all intents and purposes, he's been cut off. His children are dead, right? He's now alone in this world, if you will. And those things are taking place in his life. So Eliphaz is just trying to make the comparison that Job, this is you. This is you, Job. And you're a wicked man because this is what the wicked do. It says, for the congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate, and fire shall consume the tabernacles of bribery. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepareth deceit. And so, at the end there, Eliphaz is comparing the words that Job is saying as deceit. Remember, at the beginning of the chapter, he told Job such. Basically, Job, you're telling us all a lie. And so he says, Your belly prepareth deceit. He says, you're conjuring up more things to spew out at us, to deceive us even further. And by the way, that's his opinion of the things and the remarks that Job has been saying all along. And they are completely off base. They're completely wrong. So let me just say a few things here and we'll close it down. But we'll pick this back up a little bit as Job answers some of these things in chapter 16 next Wednesday night. But I want you to understand that the wicked does do these things. They do live in willful defiance to God and authorities. Remember Ephraim
was supposed to be,
if you will, or is, was one of Joseph's children. Remember that? Okay. But they're supposed to receive an inheritance. They're supposed to be part of God's people. All these things are supposed to happen. But Ephraim had a problem. They decided to rebel against God. They didn't want to follow God's ways, and they didn't want to follow God at all how God wanted them to follow him. So in Hosea, Hosea says something about Ephraim. It says, Ephraim is also like a silly dove without heart. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. When they shall go, I will spread my net upon them. I will bring them down as the fowls of heaven. I will chastise them as their congregation hath heard. Woe unto them, for they have fled from me. Destruction unto them, because they have transgressed against me. Though I have redeemed them, yet they have spoken lies against me. And they have not cried unto me with their heart when they howled upon their beds. They assemble themselves for corn and wine, and they rebel against me. Though I have bound and strengthened their arms, yet do they imagine mischief against me. They return, but not to the Most High. They are like a deceitful bow. Their princes shall fall by the sword for the rage of their tongue. This shall be their derision in the land of Egypt. Okay, that's Hosea's prophecy about Ephraim. But you see those attributes there? God tried to work with them. He tried to rescue them. He tried to reach out to them. And they said, no, 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 no. We need to be careful about our defiance and rebellion against God. Because although God is kind and merciful and long-suffering, he's not forever merciful, forever suffering, forever full of grace. Okay, there is an end to it. And, you know, we have many passages in Scripture that tell us there's an end to those things. You know, the Bible tells us that that we can be suddenly destroyed and that without remedy. Thank you. Hardeneth his neck, the fool does, right? And is suddenly destroyed, and that without remedy. Thank you. So we've got to be cautious about that. And, if you will, cautious about that when dealing with the lives of other people. Because you don't know what's happening in their lives. They may be rebelling against God, but then again, they may not be. So we must be careful to judge that. Psalm 17, David writes and says, from the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies who compass me round about, they are enclosed in their own fat. With their mouth they speak proudly. We know that the wicked live in defiance to God. They live in direct opposition to God. They feed the flesh and harden their heart against God. They gain riches by taking advantage of unfortunate people around them. If you read Psalm 37, verses 7 to 17, it talks about that. Proverbs 1, remember Solomon said, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Right? He goes on to talk about how they're going to lie in wait and get all this spoil and hunt for the precious souls and all these things. You understand that the wicked is trying to promote themselves because of these ways or and these things, but they're not going to get gain. They're going to be the ones in the trap. They're going to be the ones that are ended, if you will, because God is a righteous judge. God is a righteous God. But at the end here, Eliphaz tells Job that it will all come to an end because God will not let this go unpunished. And he's reminding Job that the wicked will not prosper. Job knows this. Job understands this. But this is not Job. And I love what he says in verse 2, and we're going to take a sneak peek here. He says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are ye all. I mean, that's the next thing Job says to his friends after this happens. And you know what? He's right. He's right. But make no mistake about it, child of God. Don't try to strengthen yourself against God. Don't try to stretch out against the Lord. You're no match for Him. And you know what? He will be gracious. He will be long-suffering. He will be merciful. But God does have a limit. And let me, I think I can't help but think back to Brother Athey's letter. I probably know this guy. I probably met Mr. Creighton because I preached in from 2006 till about 2018 down at the Ellis unit in the summertime, and there were many people down there that went through these things, and it's amazing how many people were in prison just because of association. I'll never forget the one young man. He was a pastor's son. And his dad told him not to hang out with a certain crowd. And he did. And that night when he got in that car with those boys, he stayed in the car. They went in, robbed the store, killed the clerk. Ran out, got in the car, drove off. He was still in there. Got caught. Guess what? 20 years. And, you know, he cried so many tears and shed so many tears. And, you know, his dad forgave him and God forgave him. And all those things are true, but had to suffer the consequences. And so, you know, it does matter how we deal with the Lord and how we work with people that are going through these circumstances. Because we need to not be terrible comforters like Job's friends. But rather, and yes, these things are true about the wicked. But we need to know them so that we can help wicked people get right with God and be saved and get right with God and have fellowship. But also we need to avoid the snares of the devil. Lest at any time we let things slip and fall into the same snares ourselves.